Welcome to the Unfiltered Podcast with me, special guest host Dr. Johnny Rees, and powered by Ultimate Performance, the world's premier personal training experience that delivers maximum results in minimum time. In each episode of the Unfiltered Podcast, we speak to the most respected, celebrated, and controversial experts in the fields of health, fitness, nutrition, well-being, and performance to help you find the life-changing advice you need to live smarter. Remember, you can find all our exclusive Unfiltered documentaries, video interviews, and investigations at unfilteredonline.com and the Unfiltered Extra YouTube channel. And now, on with the show. I am here today with CrossFit Games champion, pediatric cancer campaigner, BJJ brown belt, and entrepreneur, Jason Kalipa. Jason, thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I just want to say, before we get started, I appreciate you being flexible. It's like 10 something where you're at in the UK, and it's 2 o'clock here in California. And, you're putting in the work, man. I just want to say thank you for having me on, and thanks for the commitment.
Well, thanks, man. That's really gracious of you. And I'm really, really fired up to talk to you. So let's dig in. So I was wondering if we could kind of start off by talking a little bit about kind of how you grew up and then how things suddenly kind of got quite serious for you after high school and how that sort of was sowing the seeds for the AMRAP mentality.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, so I grew up, my parents are awesome. My dad came from Iran. My mom's family was originally from Italy, but she grew up in Rhode Island in the United States here. And my dad grew up in Iran and came over when he was like, 18, 19 years old. And so, definitely grew up with some values around me of hard work, especially as like I saw my grandparents and whatnot. But it just really wasn't, I don't know, in high school, I kind of partied a lot, kind of like the class clown, definitely trying to like have a good time. And then it wasn't until I got out of high school and I got to like a junior college that I realized like, man, like I didn't make it in the college I wanted. I didn't end up playing football where I wanted. I didn't end up, anywhere that I wanted because of my own, my own fault. It was all on me. And so it was at that point that I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to grind. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to embrace the mentality of just like, get the hell out of this junior college. And at the time I was working full time at a gym and then going to school full time. And I've basically been doing that essentially ever since. So yeah, I mean, not going to school, obviously, but I went from working full time at the gym to then owning my own business in 2008.
Yeah, 2008 was a big year for you as well, right? That's when you won the CrossFit Games as well.
Yeah, so 2008 was a big year. I graduated from college, I opened a gym, and I won the CrossFit Games basically like in a couple of months span. And that kind of really, created just a whole lifestyle, right? Of like being in the gym, training for the games, and just trying to build a business. And so it just kind of evolved and snowballed. And I was really, it was a really good time because CrossFit back then was just so raw and different. And it was great time to be in it.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it was sort of new thing as well, right? It was very like everybody was excited about it. It was really changing kind of fitness, changing the landscape, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, being in back then, it was like the antithesis of what you were used to, right? Kind of like the Pukey the clown was kind of like the mascot. It was like our warm up is your workout. It was very like rebellious. And I think at the time, it is what was needed to kind of like take off. Obviously, that's tremendously evolved now, but at the time, I think that was what was necessary.
Yeah. And especially you being in kind of right at the start there. There was a lot. I remember I was just starting in the fitness industry and there was so much kind of talk about CrossFit and then the games and how that sort of grew, really interesting stuff. And I guess maybe we could start talking about, so like you won in 2008, right? And a big theme with you is overcoming adversity. You've had a lot of tough stuff to deal with that you've managed to overcome. And I think there's so many valuable lessons there. So I guess, if we talk about 2009, because I've heard you talk about this and how like, so you were going in defending champion, right? Everybody's thinking probably going to win again. And you were really struggling behind the scenes. You were really struggling with nerves, right?
Yeah.
I was wondering kind of how you got over that, because you went on to perform well, you know, years and years in a row afterwards, right? So how did you kind of overcome that difficulty with the nerves and the anxiety?
Well, in 2008, I won. 2009, I go in there as obviously the defending champ, and, you know, I had a lot of pressure on me to perform, and I allowed it to kind of like take over me. And the first event was like a 10K hill run that was just gnarly, dirty. It was just like straight up. And I ended up blacking out on that. There's like a video of me just passing out. And I took basically last place on that event. And at that point, I don't even know, you know, in hindsight, looking back on it, maybe that was a good thing. Maybe not. I don't know. Because I basically took last place, all the expectations were gone. Like I was like, you know, it was like at that point, you're like, dude, this guy, he's done. He's out. And I crawled my way back to fifth overall, which was great.
And you won an award as well, right? That year. I know you didn't win the games, but you won an award.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. I got this. So this says, actually, this is the first podcast I've had this like at my house for. It says Spirit of the Games Award, and it was a sledgehammer. And so I won this in 2009, a Spirit of the Games Award winner. And what that was basically just like, you know, overcoming adversity, doing something, and then being able to bounce back.
Yeah, I think that's really, I mean, so how did you kind of practically get through? Because obviously you said that the pressure had kind of come off a bit, but there was still pressure later on when you competed in later years, right? Well, how did you sort of start to deal with that? Because you were the favorite a number of times, right? Not just in one year, like several years.
For many years, yeah. I mean, I was, you know, I won my region 5 years in a row. I, you know, competed in open announcements. I competed for Team USA 3 times. Like, I mean, I've competed so many times, right? And in general, I'd say for many years, you know, I was favorited to do well, right? Because of just the way it shaped up, right? You know, learning how to overcome that was important, and compartmentalizing what was in my control, out of my control, identifying, you know, how do you optimize from a performance perspective? And the key there, obviously, it's physically, of course, but the difference between the guys that perform well in the garage or the gym and the ones that perform well out on the stadium are the ones that can mentally put themselves in a position where they can harness their energy to exploit it. Like basically, like, I'm going to harness my energy and then deliver it all when it's necessary, not pre or post or whatever. And so learning how to positive self-talk, learning how to understand what's in my control, learning how to calm my nerves when it's hard to do so, right? Those were all lessons that took me a few years to learn, but definitely refined over my career.
And one of the things, I guess, kind of developing on from that was this idea of earned confidence through preparation, right? And you talk about that quite a bit in the book. I was wondering if you could kind of explain a little bit about that.
Yeah, so there's this idea of earned confidence, and I love this idea, and it relates a lot to like what I do now with jiu-jitsu or tactical games are really good examples. So one of the events that I'm getting ready to compete in is essentially firearms and CrossFit together, right? So you do like an obstacle course, and then you go and see if you can shoot targets. And the reason why I'm inspired by that is because it tests a physical skill that I don't get tested much at CrossFit or whatnot, which is accuracy. And it's also learning new skills that I haven't trained because I wasn't in the military. I went straight from college right into owning my own business. So when it comes to earned confidence, what's really important is that if I go to these events and I could tell myself all I want that I could outshoot a, you know, Navy SEAL sniper. But the reality is that I have not earned the confidence to do that. Whereas this guy has put in thousands and thousands and thousands of hours, tens of thousands of rounds downrange to earn their confidence to know that when they, you know, go through their progression and they pull the trigger, they'll be on target. For me, I haven't earned that right. And so it's something I think about all the time is perceived versus earned confidence. And so the more that I could go to the range, the more that I could do different things, and translating that to CrossFit, it's like, you know, am I earning my confidence every day to know that when I show up to the CrossFit games, I have done everything in my power to win. And that's kind of the, that's what I think about on a regular basis.
And as you said, that kind of brings the locus to, of control to you, right? So it's like, and not sort of thinking so much about things that you can't control, like really focusing on the things that you can control, kind of doubling down on that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that that's a, an important aspect as far as like, you know, earned versus perceived is like, what can I do every day to earn my confidence that when I do show up, I could be more prepared. And, you know, again, using the tactical games analogy, it's like, if I'm going to the range, if I'm dry firing, if I'm doing all these things every day, I will be much more in a confident position that isn't perceived. Like, I could tell myself all I want, I could knock out Floyd Mayweather. The reality is I'm probably not going to, right? That guy's been training for decades and decades and is super skilled. I haven't earned that right yet. And so that's the way that I look at anything in life that I'm trying to accomplish is, am I earning the ability to go out there and execute, whether that be on the range, on the mats, in the gym, or at work? Those are all relatable.
And this mentality has served you very well across the kind of wide range of different, as you said, like, you know, the tactical games now, jiu-jitsu, what, like maybe 8 years ago, you know, you've changed and you've competed in, and you were quite a successful American football player as well, right? So you've always kind of had this, I guess, work ethic to an extent, right? Always kind of, and then you developed it over the years.
Yeah, and I think definitely it kind of sparked even more through through college, and kind of when I got out of college, it's like, hey man, what do you want to be about? Like, you can't just coast; you got to put in the work. And you know, I'm also just like really dedicated to learning new skills, and I find that like the only way to achieve those new skills is if you're earning your confidence and really putting in the work. And I just think it's a very important concept because nowadays people want instant gratification because of social media, you know, swiping left, swiping right, this, that. You know, I could not be bored in an instant and find myself in a different world. But the reality is if you want to be great at something, you have to put in weeks, I mean, months, years, decades of work before you could earn the confidence to know you can go out there and perform.
And it says a lot about you, the fact that, you know, you hit the absolute high spots, you know, fittest man in the world. And then you started, you know, BJJ you hadn't done it before, right?
No.
So like, there's Jason Khalifa, fittest man in the world. And then he's like, he's a complete rookie at BJJ. And that takes a lot of confidence to put yourself in that position.
Yeah. And I think you have to, right? Because imagine all the lessons I'm going to learn from that. You know, if you, and here, selfishly, here's the selfish side. So this morning I'm at the gym and we're going over like handstand pushups, which I don't really do much anymore. But I have a skill set in those that for me to get better at a handstand pushup, even like 2% is hard for me to do. If anything, I'm going the opposite direction, right? Because
but you're already at that high level. Right?
Yeah, like I dedicated my life for over a decade to just those skills, right? So my ability to walk on my hands, like it's hard for me to get better at them, especially now. Like I'm going the opposite direction because I don't lift as heavy as often. But selfishly, when you look at these other skills, let's just take them: be jujitsu, shooting sports, a variety of other things like archery. I'm interested in archery. I can make 10% gains, if not more, in 6 months. So it's really inspiring because when you start exposing yourself to new skills, you start seeing the byproduct and the results much quicker than you do if you became a quote unquote expert at something. So for that reason, it's exciting.
Yeah. And there are all sorts of benefits to that, right? Especially you've talked about building a hedge and sort of, obviously you've got the fitness piece pretty well down, right? But this sort of learning new skills is great for your brain, is great for all sorts of other things in addition to your fitness, right? And it very much fits in the train, protect, provide type approach to life.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because you're right. For me, for so many years, I was trying to be the fittest on earth. And I still believe that there's value in becoming obviously very fit, but there's a lot of other value in just like neurologically, confidence, you know, learning new skills outside the gym just make you more appreciative for the skills you develop inside the gym because they allow you the freedom to go and do these other things. Like I don't ever have to worry if my kids want to go do something physical. I never have to worry about doing it. Like yesterday I'm playing football with my son, American football. And like I don't have to worry about running after him. Like, I'm going to run after him. I'm going to tackle his ass. Like, and because I train in the gym. And so when I think about, you know, where I'm at in my life, you know, I'm 38 years old. My daughter's 13. My son's 10. My goals have changed from when they were super young or not even born yet, trying to win the CrossFit Games, to now it's like, dude, how do I protect myself and my family? Meaning run, jump, climb, lift, fight if needed, and provide, which is like experiences, like always being able to go do things with them and never being hindered. And meanwhile, how do I use fitness as a catalyst to set myself in the right mindset so I could perform at work as well? So that's kind of how my journey's evolved.
And I think that's really useful, because this momentum that you kind of built in fitness, this never zero kind of mentality and momentum, really kind of serves you well and kind of bleeds positively into, as you said, all the other areas of life, being a father, being a husband, being a businessman, that are equally demanding, right?
Yeah. I mean, the never zero mentality is a really simple concept. It's like, actually a really good analogy is like pushing a sled. So I'm sure you've pushed your fair share of sleds. When you push a sled, like on a flat surface, once you get it started, it kind of, you know, flat surface, not uphill, but once you get it started, it just kind of, you know, kind of keeps going. And then when you stop, it's like, shit, I got to start back up again and push this. And it's really difficult. And so the idea of the never zero mentality is like, just do something. Because as soon as you stop, like, let's just say I'm pushing a sled and I stop for like a minute, not that big of a deal. But if I stop for like 5 minutes, it's really difficult to get back on that sled and want to push it. And shoot, if I left that sled and I came back to it the next day, I really don't want to push it. And so the analogy is, if every day we just do something, whether it's a walk, a ruck, or use our Train Hard app, those are all going to keep our momentum from getting to zero. Because once they hit zero, it's really easy for that zero to turn into 2 days of zero, 3 days of zero. And then before you know it, it's really difficult to get back on the plan.
And I think that's actually one thing, you just brought up the app. And I think one thing that's really useful about that is the fact that you have these different kind of divisions, right? Where if you're really pushed for time one day, you've got the EMOM, you've got this ability to like just do something that doesn't take a lot of equipment, doesn't take a lot of time, but then you still got it done. You still kept the momentum, even if you couldn't do one of the full, you know, force or flex that would take a bit longer, right?
Yeah. That's kind of like the theory, right? Like force is like our fundamental strength conditioning program. I would definitely recommend, if anybody's interested in looking at programs, to start by joining our newsletter, kind of get an idea of like what we're about. You can also listen to my podcast, the Jason Kalipa podcast, kind of get the idea. And then if you decide you want to use our training programs, that's great. But force is a strength conditioning, flex, more functional bodybuilding. And then EMOM, to your point, is like 20 to 30 minutes. It's like your minimal viable dose is the way we like to look at it.
Yeah. But that's great as well, because a lot of people, presumably they can dip in and out and do different, like one day they could do an EMOM if they can't, you know, fit in the time, or they're traveling, maybe they don't have the equipment, et cetera, that kind of stuff, right?
Exactly. Yeah. The theory behind it is like, use force or flex like your main program, and EMOM is like this auxiliary component. If you are traveling or on the go or whatever, it's just a nice, like, you know, it's an available resource for you.
Yeah, I think that's really useful. And I mean, I suppose they're kind of CrossFit derived in some ways, right? So I was wondering, kind of talking a little bit about CrossFit again, but what do you think the sort of biggest strengths of it are and the biggest kind of weaknesses of it are? And I appreciate your system has evolved from there, but like talking about CrossFit.
I think the biggest strengths could also be its biggest weaknesses. Its biggest strength is, so CrossFit is all about constantly varied functional movements at a high intensity to increase work capacity across broad time and modal domains. So in a nutshell, for someone who's not as familiar with CrossFit, constantly varied functional movements at a high intensity. So let's break that down for a second, pros and cons. Constantly varied is good because it keeps your body guessing and adaptation continues to evolve. It also keeps you less bored because it's constantly varied. That's like the good side. The bad side is it's also constantly varied. So it requires you exposure at a lot of different, there's a lot of different exposures, snatches, rope climbs, whatever. but maybe you don't desire those things. So like on the one hand, it could be great for people who desire those skill sets. On the other hand, if you don't desire those things, it might not be the program for you because there's a wide depth. And if you only want to train 2-3 days a week, 4 days a week, it's hard to get good at these skills because there's so many to create adaptation from. So that's why for train hard programs, we've kind of consolidated some of those down to be varied, but not like constantly varied. Like we're not doing snatches, rope climbs, and muscle ups. We're consolidating it down a little bit. Then you talk about high intensity. And I think that, well, constantly varied function moves, we'll break down high intensity. I think that high intensity for the most part is a good thing in general. Like I think threshold training, I think high intensity, I think that when your body gets like shocked, it wants to create adaptation. So for that reason, I think intensity is in general a good thing. Now, where it becomes a bad thing is if you take that to a, you know, excessive position where, you know, you're getting so sore you can't move. Or for me, like if I'm ripping my hands where I can't play with my kids, like that's unacceptable. So intensity has to be relative to the individual. I think that's really important. So intensity is a great thing, but needs to be relative to the individual. And for me, it's evolved to where like my intensity will only be so high as I could still do the things I want to do. If I can no longer play with my kids because I'm too sore, I went too hard. So that's something that's important for me. Whereas back in the day, I wouldn't care. I would just sit on the couch for the rest of the day, right?
And that's a huge difference between, you know, trying to win the CrossFit games, right?
Yep.
And just being like a, you know, a guy who wants to be in shape and be very capable.
Right.
Like a more like an average person, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's why like our app, it's all about, you know, creating capable human beings versus like trying to win the sport of CrossFit. And the last piece I'd add on this is the functional movements. And I think that there's a lot of value in functional movements. When you think of a functional movements, they're compound, they're large load, long distance, quickly. They're things like back squats, thrusters, clean and jerks, multi-joint. I think there's a ton of value in them because they produce a unique amount of power and they could deliver a lot of results. But I also think there's a lot of value in isolation that we in CrossFit kind of, foo-fooed for a while. And I think that there is value in doing both. And that's why our programs have a functional bodybuilding. It's a little bit more isolation and connecting neurologically your brain with your body and saying, hey, I want my biceps to be, you know, contracted here versus I'm just trying to get as much work done as I can as quickly as possible. So that's kind of in a nutshell, the pros and cons of CrossFit. I'd say there's a lot of pros. It gets people in very good shape, but you just need to be aware of like how much time can you dedicate to it? How varied do you want to be? How intense do you want to get? And then also recognizing like, I think there's value in not just doing big mover movements and focusing also on isolation.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I last couple on CrossFit, I guess. So we, you know, there are lots of competitors to CrossFit now that there weren't when you started, right? That there weren't for years.
Right.
What do you think about the kind of future of CrossFit in light of like Hyrox and, you know, all sorts of things like that are springing up that try to incorporate the good things and perhaps kind of, as you said, evolve from the less or the things that people struggle with maybe?
Yeah, I think if I'm not mistaken, Hyrox came out where you're at, right? It was started in the UK. Is that correct?
I think it was started in Europe. It may not have been the UK, but yeah.
Okay. So I think, you know, so Hyrox, so it started in the UK. And I think what's important to note about that is that the sport of CrossFit, first off, I want to acknowledge the fact that I think CrossFit has changed the landscape of fitness forever. CrossFit, and I would say Greg Glassman largely, is the reason why you see kettlebells at commercial gyms, the reason why gymnastics has had a huge influx, Olympic lifting has had a resurgence. These things have came through CrossFit, in my opinion. And I think that it's only a matter of time before other sports spawn off from it. And you could say that some things like, even the tactical games have similarities to CrossFit. They're just adding firearms to it. But I think Hyrox is the best example of like a legit threat to CrossFit. You had things back in the day, like the Grid League and the US Functional Fitness. But I think that Hyrox, the reason why they're catching steam is because it's CrossFit, but it's repeatable, meaning it's the same 10 events every single time. And I think that people like that because they know what they're getting themselves into and they're able to compare to other people. So I definitely think that CrossFit has some threats like that, but I don't think it changes the fact that the biggest factor that CrossFit has going for them and what they need to focus on is the affiliates and the certifications and the training program, maybe a little bit less about the sport. If I was them, I would focus a lot more on brand building, education, the methodology, and probably not focus as much on the sport. I would actually potentially sell off the sport side to someone who does that full time, like a, you know, name the company.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, it does make a lot of sense when you think about it like that. And I suppose the last one on CrossFit, I feel like I have to ask you this with my background, which is on sort of, you know, enhancement in sport and all that sort of stuff. As a guy who was around the sport for such a long time, right at the top level for years and years on end.
Yeah.
Did you see much kind of use of PEDs and that sort of thing? And like a lot of people will claim that, you know, the top guys couldn't do that without PEDs. But obviously you're uniquely qualified to talk about this, right? Yeah, so
I mean,
love
look
to get your take.
No one, if you're listening to what I'm about to say and you don't trust me anyways, it doesn't matter what I say. But I will say that I started in the sport in 2006. I won the CrossFit Games at 2008 and I won $1,200. Okay. I stayed basically at the top of the sport for the next about decade. Okay. So, and the reason why I preface that is because I took a first, a fifth, a 16th, a seventh, a fifth, a second, and a third. So like a lot of top tens in there. But I didn't start when there was any money in the sport. No money, no fame, no nothing. My sponsorships were almost zero. And that money really didn't start coming in, I'd say, until like 2011, 12. And then the big boom happened like 13, 14, 15, because you had Reebok and Nike and other sponsors come in big time. The reason why I preface this answer with that is that at the time, I had won the games and there was no reason for me to be on PEDs because I couldn't even afford them. Like I couldn't afford enhancing drugs back in 2008, making $1,200. I think in 2009, maybe I made a couple thousand dollars off sponsorships. 2010, maybe that ramped up to $30,000. 2011, then, okay, that became some like, you know, legitimate money then. So the answer that I would say is, I personally did not take any performance enhancing drugs, nor did I witness or hear any of my peers at the time. That's not to say that that isn't happening today. And I was also drug tested for a lot of years. I was on a drug. I actually might still be on a drug testing list actually. And they would do random drug tests. And so, but I do think the sport has evolved where recovery becomes a major factor, but from my tenure in the sport, I never saw it.
Interesting. And a lot of you, like, am I right in thinking that for a long time, anybody who was on the podium automatically got tested, right?
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah. And I know that I kind of went long-winded on that answer and I apologize. But the reason why I prefaced it as so is like, dude, if you're listening to me talk right now, why would you get on PEDs when you only had the ability to make $1,200? Then I won. Then I took fifth. Then I was in top 10. Why would I do PEDs if I was already at the top? Was like what I asked myself all the time is like, and something I did ask myself like around 2012, 13, 14 is I said to myself, should I explore PEDs? I actually asked myself. And the answer that I kept going back to was no, for two reasons. One, I was already at the top. And two, I would always look back on my performances as an athlete and wonder, could I have done it without the performance enhancing drug? And that would have driven me nuts, right? And yes, everybody on the podium was tested and everybody entered into a random drug test. So people would show up at your house randomly and test you.
Yeah. So it was very much like WADA testing. It was quite stringent then.
Yeah. And they changed the rules where like they actually had to watch like the urine come out of like, it was really awkward at times, but yes, they did that.
Yeah, very much like WADA then. Yeah, that sort of Olympic standard type testing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think oftentimes people look at athletes like at the CrossFit Games and assume that there's always types of steroid use. And I think that it's unfortunate that our society naturally gravitates towards, oh, they must be on X. Look, is there people that might be on stuff? Of course. Like maybe. But there's so many factors that get you to that level, and the performance enhancing. I mean, look at like a Tia Toomey. Okay. Let's take Tia Toomey, Claire, who's current, like she's 6-time CrossFit Games champion, I think. Six. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
She just had a baby. She's coming back. She's currently ranked number one. She is one, you know, basically just is crushing the quarterfinals. This woman has been in winning the CrossFit Games, winning her regionals for years, tested countless times, then gets pregnant, comes back, and now is number one. You think she's going to be doing performance enhancing drugs while she's pregnant or after she was pregnant? No, like, I don't know. I think that there's some people have it and some people don't.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And especially, as you said, in her case, with the sort of reproductive implications of being a woman and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, the risk. And she was like you. She was already at the top, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, she was at the top, top. I was at the top. She was at the top, 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 top. I mean, she's definitely on the ladies' side. She has clearly established herself as the greatest of all time with her performances.
And just out of interest, who would you put as the greatest of all time on the men's?
You know, I get this question sometimes. I think it's a really easy answer and it's kind of a cop out. I think that obviously Frazier's won more championships. I think that Froning has done a lot for the sport. I think that he also won a lot of team championships. But I think that the way that you would compare, so I'd say that those two are the two like better in the debate. There's a few of us that are like in that top five range, but those two are the top. And the argument I make is that when they competed against each other, Froning beat him. So I would say, you know, that year was 2014. Froning won. Matt Frazier took second, and I took third that year. So for that reason alone, I would put Froning there. But Matt has more championships. It's complicated, but that's the only time they really competed like that against each other.
Yeah, that direct competition, that counts for a lot as well, right?
Yeah, and look, people can make arguments like, oh, Rich was more, you know, in his prime and Matt was still... Look, you could debate back and forth. Both of them are awesome. It's just that's the only one that I fall back on.
It's really interesting to hear your insight, right? Because very few people, there are only a handful of people who could give this kind of insight. So
yeah,
really cool. And I guess changing gears now. So, sure. So moving on kind of from CrossFit to 2016. And, you know, you received this... Well, every parent's nightmare, right? You receive this diagnosis for your daughter with leukemia, and you've since done a huge amount actually to, you know, raising funds for pediatric cancer and leukemia and all that sort of stuff. But like,
that's right.
How did you kind of deal with that initially? And then how did you manage to kind of keep positive, keep moving forward? Because you didn't kind of drop the ball on anything. A lot of people would have fallen apart, but you managed to kind of keep things going. Yeah. How did you do that?
Well, I appreciate the sentiment. I would say that, you know, it was having really strong relationships, right? With my wife, with my family, with my friends, with our coworkers who picked up where I couldn't on. That was probably the main thing, you know, like, cause at the time we were expanding, we had, gyms globally. Just a lot was going on. Right. And when Ava got sick, it just required us to reevaluate and say, hey, what are our priorities and where are we trying to go? And I think embracing this mindset for years that I call the AMRAP mentality just served me really well, where the AMRAP mentality is just about being present and focused on whatever you're doing at the time. And then switching gears to that next focus. So like right now I'm talking to you, you're all I'm focused on. You know, after this, I'm going to go train. Then after that, I'm going to go spend time with the family. And when I'm in each vertical, I just be present and focused. And what that allows you to do, kind of like the way in AMRAP, like if I ask you as many burpees as you can in 5 minutes, the benefit there is that it allows you to have really strong connection with your friends and family because you're having real relationships and real conversations. It allows you to get the most out of your workout because you're being present and focused. You get fitter, so you can build that hedge. And then it allows you to be present and focused at work and build this financial hedge. And so I'm grateful that I had embraced that mindset for so many years going into this, because if anybody was going to get, you know, hit with it, you know, I guess it was us. And we were as well positioned as we could because of that mindset.
And you put a lot, you know, because I remember reading the book and you started writing the book. And I think the diagnosis came at some point around then. And you actually ended up writing a slightly different book from the book that you were going to write. Is yeah. that correct?
Well, at the time I was traveling around the world, opening up locations with corporate wellness. And I wanted to write a book on like the anti, like, do less, get paid more book. Like basically like, dude, just go out and work, like, was the idea. And then when this happened, it just like, it really invigorated me. We ended up donating a ton of money from that book. And we still do a lot of stuff for pediatric cancer. But yeah, definitely her getting sick transformed the way I looked at many, many things, my perspective on things. And it still is continuing to shift my perspective. And I'm almost, I don't want to say I'm fortunate, but you know, Ava got diagnosed when my wife and I were pretty young. And I'd say that experience aged us, but it definitely taught us a lot in the meantime.
It's amazing that you can find the positive in such a kind of what seems like such a negative thing, right? On the face of it. It's amazing. And the way that you've also managed to kind of find the positive and put it as a force for good in terms of, like, you know, raising funds and raising awareness and like helping other people who might be going, because obviously there are hundreds, thousands of people who go through similar things, right? And even potentially worse in some ways, I guess. You know, less treatable and stuff.
100%. 100%. I totally agree with you. And yeah, I mean, I think the idea is that one is that if you have, I think you have an obligation, if you have a microphone, to share and support where you can within reason. And I think that for us, you know, my wife has really championed this. I think she's raised, I mean, at this point, I think she's like 3.5 million raised so far, maybe close to four, with annual fundraisers over the last 7 years called Ava's Kitchen. And, you know, we have a network of family and friends that care because they saw it. They were a part of it. They hear our story. And if I could impart any, you know, perspective on other families that are going through it or fundraise to help them, I almost feel like I have a duty and an obligation to. That's just the way I feel about it.
No, I mean, it's great that, you know, you're still to this day, right? I think you had an event like last month or something at Ava's Kitchen, right? It's still, you know, ongoing.
Yeah, it's every like February, March. Yeah, every year, man, every year. And it's a commitment, and that and blood drives are going to be things we're going to do forever. And you know, because life has an interesting way of shifting your perspective and opening your eyes. And I think what's important is to never forget kind of like the lessons learned. And it's easy when you get further away from some circumstances that you fall back in old habits. But I think it's important to remind yourself of, like, during those times, these trials and tribulations, what was the lesson learned? How do you ingrain that in your mind for the rest of your life so that you always maintain that sense of gratitude for when things are going well? I think that's important. And that's something I think about on a regular basis.
And yeah, I mean, building this kind of hedge as well is related, because you do a lot of kind of community stuff as well. You know, I've seen a lot with the Train Hard Men's Club and giving back, giving your time for free, helping people train for free that, you know, you don't have to do, but it's building up a network. It's building up a lot of goodwill. You know, there's a lot to that that's, you know, it says a lot about you because you don't have to do any of this stuff, right?
Yeah. And I mean, so every week for the last 32 weeks, I've just been putting on free workouts for men, and there's no ask, there's no obligation. We talk no business. I've never asked anything of anybody other than just to come and train hard. That's it. And my selfish perspective is I'm trying to create the fittest community on the planet. My goal is that if there's a zombie apocalypse here in my town, I want to have the fittest, most capable men to help. And I also want the fittest, most capable men to surround my family and my children so that they can impart different wisdom and characteristics on my kids too. So selfishly, that's my initiative. And yeah, we've been going at it now for 7-8 months, and it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning.
And presumably it kind of keeps growing as well. I remember you said it started at your house, and then, you know, it kind of grew so much that you couldn't really have it at your house. You didn't know a lot of these people. So, like, yeah, what's the sort of, What's the next step?
Well, tomorrow morning, I got a group coming to my house that are all from like my kids' school. So that'll probably be like 10, 15 guys to crutch in the gym just because. And then Saturday or Sunday, we'll put on the men's club at a local, you know, park or parking lot. And anybody's available. I mean, anybody's open to that. The long-term vision, I'd say, is like, how do I create leaders globally who could start doing these on their own? And I could start saying, hey, Johnny, like, you know, here's the workout. Go invite three of your friends and just go do this in a park. And the reason why I think it's so valuable is that it's creating relationships shoulder to shoulder in the dirt. And there's nothing fancy about it. You know, I own gyms right down the street, like maybe 20 minutes away. But the reason why we choose these things in the dirt or in the gravel is because there's something just like old school about it that just invigorates like this outdoor. It's cold, it's shitty, it's rainy, let's go. And I think that we need more of that as a society, specifically when it comes to men.
Yeah. And I mean, just from my own experiences, some of the best kind of friends I've made have been people I've trained with or people I've played sport with. That kind of way of, I guess, bonding, that kind of way of making friends is a really good way that seems to kind of stay with you much more so than other interactions, perhaps.
For sure. 100%. And so, yeah, I mean, right now, you know, we got the gyms, we got the Train Hard, we got the newsletter, we got the podcast, and we do these things on the weekend. And it's just, I don't know. I might create an Instagram channel for it is what I was thinking, so that people can like get updates on where I'm going to be at and what we're going to be doing. That's kind of maybe the next step.
That's really cool. And as you said, I think that's very much a kind of necessary thing in 2024, especially right in the modern. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier that I wanted to kind of pick up on while we're on that theme is this idea of being where you are at the time and focusing on, you know, what's going on at the time. So if you're at work, you're at work. If you're training, you're training. If you're with your family, you're with your family. And I think that's actually become pretty, you know, much more difficult than it was, say, like 25 years ago. Phones, social media.
It's impossible. But
that makes it even more important, yeah. Right? That makes it even more of a valuable, it's almost like a superpower to be able to just focus on what you're doing until you do it. And you've mentioned a lot of interesting things about, say, like using the clock, you know, that's kind of derived from CrossFit, but works in other, like works with, I use it when I'm working, for example.
Yeah, you could start a clock. Hey, for the next 30 minutes, I'm going to go ahead and answer as many emails as I can. Hey, for the next, you know, this. And it is harder and harder in a digital world. And I think as long as you're aware, I think that's the first step, right? Like being aware, being cognizant of it and being intentional, I think is the key.
Yeah, that's really cool. So last couple of questions.
Sure.
You talked about having strong beliefs, but loosely held.
Yeah, that was
good. And I think that's a really good kind of framework for thinking about things. I think that's a really good approach to having your beliefs. Could you kind of A, explain a little bit about that, and B, perhaps kind of give an example of that or an example of how the strong belief may have changed because it was loosely held, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I was on our podcast, the Jason Cleave podcast, we were talking about this and Thomas DeLauer, I believe was the first person that said this, was like, I have a strong belief in something. Let's just say for the sake of argument, you know, I believe that you should drink a gallon of water a day, or name the thing, right? And it's a strong belief that I have, but it's loosely held in terms of like, if there's great data, if there's my own experiences that change my perspective, I'm willing to change that position. And I think as you get older, you should come up with strong beliefs. And this doesn't necessarily apply to things like commitment or religion or things like that. That's not what we're talking about. Like, if you commit to your spouse, like you commit to your spouse, that's not like a loosely held theme for me. Like, but what I'm talking about is more like, hey, I believe that, a perfect example. I believe that no kid should ever, have a PlayStation. Let's just say that's the belief. And you are like super gung ho on it. But as you get older, as you mature, as your kids get older, you gather more information, you talk to other families, you talk to your child, you start balancing these things and you start saying, okay, I have a strong belief in this, but maybe I need to reevaluate that concept. And I think that's important because what happens is a lot of people, I think they dig their heels in these strong beliefs, even if all the signs are pointing them like, hey man, you got to make a change. And I think that that's what we're really talking about, is that have strong belief, have conviction in what you're doing, but be open-minded enough that if things need to change, like they need to change. And I think that's okay.
And I think one of the things you touched on there is, you know, being receptive to evidence and not being so kind of dogmatic that you can't change your mind, right?
Right.
And not attaching your identity to certain beliefs, like people have beliefs about like nutrition and stuff like that. Not like making that a part of your identity, right? There's not necessarily one correct answer. There's not necessarily one, you know, only one way of doing things.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that that theory kind of summarizes it well, right? Like strong beliefs loosely held. I think it's just really just talking about, and I think this happens with age. When you're like in your 20s, you think you know everything. And then you get in your 30s and you start kind of realizing, maybe I don't know as much as I thought I knew. And now here I am as my kids get older and I'm approaching close to my 40s. It's like, wow, I really don't know anything. I need to constantly learn. And I think that I could only imagine when I get to my 40s, 50s, 60s, like how my perspective will shift. And I think it gives even more credibility when someone with tenure starts talking to you, like, you should probably just listen. Like,
yeah, I think, yeah, that's well put. I think that's a good way of explaining it. Well, Jason, is there anything you wish I'd asked, or is there anything that I've neglected to ask that you hoped I might ask?
No, I mean, dude, I love this. This was a great conversation. I really appreciate it. I like having free flowing conversations like this. You know, I just think that the secret is, you know, none of us have like a crystal ball. We're all just trying to make the best decisions we can every single day. And what I will leave people with is that on a regular basis, I try and have these micro check-ins, so that one day I don't wake up and say, oh crap, I've been a terrible name the thing. And if I check in every day on how am I doing as a husband, a father, a business owner, an athlete, I could always look back and say, hey, at that time I made the best decision I could with the information I had. And for that reason, it gives you a nice solace. Whereas if you don't do these check-ins and you just look at it at a macro scale, you might be asleep for a year and look back and be like, damn, I was never engaged with my kids. I was never engaged at work. And that's something I'm not prepared to do.
No, and you strike a really good balance between sort of realizing that you're always improving and realizing that there are always ways to improve, but also, like, as you said, knowing that you made the best decisions with the information you had at the time. You did, because nobody has a crystal ball, right? You do what you can with what you can at the time.
Yeah, and that guilt and that regret can drive you nuts. I know I've had my fair share of it from business and different areas. But I, like I said, if you continuously reflect on it, you don't have to worry about that, right? Because, you know, in business, for example, you look back 2 years from now, you're like, dude, I shouldn't have made that decision. But if you at the time really thought about it, like really took the time, like did all your homework, did everything, and you still decided to go that route, dude, what else are you going to do? Like, that's it, you know?
No, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I was wondering if we could finish off with a kind of lightning round.
Lightning, so let's go.
If I just fire some questions at you and, you know, you can answer as with a sort of long response or probably just like a sentence or two.
Okay.
How does that sound?
Let's do it.
All right. And if you don't like a question, we can just move on. So start off with biggest rival.
I mean, I guess, you know, in sports, it was Rich Froning. Yeah.
Okay. Toughest workout.
In 2012 or 13, there was a triathlon. No, 2011. There was a triathlon at Camp Pendleton in California. That was the worst ever.
Okay. Biggest failure.
I've lost in jiu-jitsu matches. I've lost in, you know, I've blacked out on competition floor. You know, I'd say though, like, I'd say my biggest failure has not recognizing my strengths and weaknesses earlier in business and not being able to lead more effectively our team. I wish I had been able to do that better. I think in general with the kids, I've really tried to have good perspective, but I think when it comes to the business, I didn't have that same perspective. I wish I had taken more time to get into more leadership summits, to get into more mentorship groups, so I could have opened my mind better as a leader earlier.
That's a good answer. That's a very kind of considered answer as well. There are a lot of lessons in that one.
Yeah.
most memorable competitive moment?
I competed in this event called the Burden Run, and I just smashed it. And this crowd, this huge soccer stadium just filled with people, it was crazy. The Burden Run was my favorite.
Amazing. Greatest inspiration outside fitness?
Probably my wife and my parents, I'd say.
Biggest thing you've changed your mind on? I guess we kind of covered this a little bit, but biggest thing that you kind of, changed your mind on?
I feel like I changed my mind a lot on, the biggest thing I've changed my mind on is that success does not equate to revenue or how many employees you have. Success is how many people can you support in a really good, authentic way for them to live a life that you're proud that they're living? And how can you make sure that you are present and focused on your family? And that to me is success, right? Like, is being able to provide for my family while also be able to provide for a small group of others and having them thrive and us thrive. Versus what I changed my mind on is I used to think, I want to grow this company to as many employees as humanly possible. And I thought that's what success was.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And that's a great kind of reframing of it, as you said as well, right? That's a really good, that's really interesting. Okay, so a couple of others. What's more important, talent or work ethic? And second to that, I guess, do you kind of attribute a lot of your success to talent or to work ethic?
I think work ethic. Yeah, I think that there's a lot of people with a lot of talent, but unless you have the work ethic and the passion to drive it, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, that's great. Best piece of advice you've ever received?
You can look at this in so many ways. Treat your business like a business and not a hobby, blah, 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 blah. Keep date nights with your significant other. The one that just like immediately comes to mind would probably be my dad saying like the expectation should be that life is going to be hard. And so that when it isn't, you should really enjoy those good days. And he came from, like I said, he came from Iran. He came with a whole different vantage point. Like the hard days over there are different than, the hard days that I'm talking about potentially. But I think that when you look at that as a family, as a husband, as a dad, it's like, dude, the prerequisite should be that like life's gonna be tough. And the older you get, the more responsibilities you have, the harder it's gonna get. But when it is good, just embrace it, because it's not always gonna be that way.
Yeah, I think you're a living embodiment of that, right? Of facing the adversity, overcoming it, facing further adversity, overcoming it, and enjoying the kind of good times. And I guess the hard times make the good times even sweeter, right? In a way.
Yeah. I mean, look at it this way. Like, my daughter has been in a residency program for 2.5 months. She has not been at our house in 2.5 months for health issues. And she comes home 2 days from now. So it's going to be like Christmas at our house. It's going to be like, we're popping champagne and we're celebrating big. But we wouldn't be able to have that emotion unless we had to go through this other. And this isn't the exact example, but the point I'm trying to make is that life is going to have difficult times. And you can either say that you learned something from them and grew from it, or it just turns into a shitty experience. So for me, going through this, the positive is I need to embrace her being home and just embrace every moment, because for 2.5 months, I haven't had that. And if I didn't go through that, I wouldn't have the bliss that I'm going to feel on Friday. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're going to appreciate it 3 times as much, right?
Exactly.
Because it was taken away for a period. Yeah. And I think you've just covered it here. But like, piece of advice you'd give to, say, 20-year-old Jason, but you may have just covered it there, I think.
Yeah, I just think keep your head down, keep working, and try and have an open mind, and always, always remember that like people are going to come in there. Like, if I could give advice to my 20-year-old self, I would say, Jason, work hard and detach in all situations from your ego, your emotion, your perspective. Detach from your ego. Don't allow that to take over. Detach from being emotional when you're connecting with people. And always look at situations from different persons' lenses and perspectives, because they don't come to it the same way that you do. Everybody comes from a different perspective, and be more open-minded. I think that as a young 20-year-old who's a gritty, hard worker, who could have that mentality, the sky's the limit.
Especially today, right? When a lot of people aren't prepared to think like that and be like that and work hard. I think, as you said, if you're a 20-year-old today and you really embrace that, you'd probably be going places.
100%.
Last two. greatest hope for the future?
Yeah, I mean, I want to watch my children grow up and be happy.
And again, I think this might be related, but what do you want your legacy to be? So Jason Khalifa, you know, you've done all sorts of things. What would you want your legacy to be 30, 40, 50 years from now?
That guy was a good husband. He was a great dad, and he gave a shit about his community. And, you know, he wanted to level people up. Like, he wanted to give more than he took. Like, you know, the contribution as a man, something I've been thinking about a lot lately is like, I want to add more to society than I'm taking. I want to provide more than I'm taking, provide more value, provide, share more, give more. And that's what I'd want to be known for.
Well, I think that's a great place to end. If people would kind of think about that and really take these lessons to heart, there's so many useful and valuable bits of information, you know, that you've given here, and so many kind of memorable and persuasive lessons. So I really appreciate your time. Is there any way you'd like to direct people to? Obviously, we'll put links to everything, but
I think the best place,
we'll learn a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening to podcasts, just type in Jason Khalifa podcast. If you're on Instagram, check out Jason Khalifa. If you're, you know, and then join our newsletter. I think our newsletter for everybody listening, guys, girls, older, younger, I think there's a lot of value in our newsletter every week. So I would start there as well.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's been great.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Unfiltered podcast. If you've got this far, I hope you won't mind if I ask you to leave a 5-star review when you get the chance. We'd really appreciate it. And don't forget, you can access all of our exclusive Unfiltered video interviews and features at unfilteredonline.com and the Unfiltered Extra YouTube channel. See you next time.